Welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. I'm on my own this week. Jamie can't be with us. Al's obviously started his new role. Rachel's picked up a knee injury in the Six Nations fixture at the weekend and can't be with us either. So, yeah, I'm flying solo for the time being. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Chief Executive Officer Dominic Mackay, who moves on from Scottish Rugby a week on Friday. And over the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to have a deep dive into his thoughts, I suppose his responses to what we expect in the future, and certainly how the game's gone at BT Murrayfield and all around Scotland over the last 10 or 12 years. I suppose the decision has been brought forward. You're now starting a new role as of next week. So I suppose, how did that come about? Was it a natural break, I suppose, in the season with the culmination of the international season and the Pro 14, etc.? Or has there other factors just brought the start date forward a little?
Afternoon, Chris. Naturally, with the end of the Six Nations for the men's team and at the conclusion of the Six Nations, that's a good moment to sort of move on. Also, we've got some big sponsor announcements we've announced today. And we've also got the end of the Pro 14 season before we start the Rainbow Cup. So there's a natural point there for me to move on. And the business has been great. So I'm grateful for that opportunity to sort of to move on. And, you know, it gives me a chance to sort of reflect in 13 years of great fun with great people.
Yeah. Before we look back, you mentioned the sponsorship announcements, more positive news for Scottish rugby. And what has been a difficult time, we keep saying, but the support we've had from our partners and sponsors throughout the last 18 months or so has been exceptional. But more good news, as you say, with Peter Vardy and BT certainly continue the involvement in Scottish rugby.
Yeah, both BT and Peter Vardy have been partners of Scottish Rugby. I think this will take BT through to almost a decade of investment and support. I remember many years ago when we originally did the deal and people were a bit anxious about the naming rights for Murrayfield, and we now call it BT Murrayfield. And that just seems to work, and it's just worked really well over the last number of years. And it's worked really well for BT. As a result of that, they've been happy to extend their investment into Scottish rugby, which is so important for us. And then Peter Vardy, who was a sponsor before, coming back to be a major sponsor now in the front of the men's national team is an incredible recognition, I think, of the stability of Scottish rugby and also the brand of Scottish rugby, that you've got big, big blue chip partners like BT and Peter Vardy that in the middle of a pandemic want to invest significant sums to the benefit of the game at every level. And we're, you know, massively grateful. And they're great companies for us to be partnering with.
The impact will be felt not just at the top end, but obviously as it already has been right throughout the game, from the men's and the women's international teams through the professional ranks, the Super Six ranks, right into the club game and the grassroots game. That's important, isn't it? It's really important that continues.
It's vital. I think during the course of the pandemic, we have worked really closely with our sponsors and with our partners, and they've been amazing in terms of supporting us and backing us, and then some of them extending further their investment. And I think that's a recognition that as a governing body, we've got a number of different parts of our organisation that need to be nurtured and looked after. The grassroots game is absolutely vital, and that's important for many partners, but equally the professional teams and the national teams are equally important. So depending on what sponsor or partner we have, we've got something for them to invest in. And I think in many respects, Chris, sport's never been more important in the middle of a pandemic. As we build back off the back of hopefully this COVID crisis, there's an opportunity for young people to get back out and play sport and get involved, get active, get healthy. And as a governing body, Scottish Rugby has got a huge leadership role to play in helping people get fit and healthier as they sort of move out of this COVID period.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Look forward to getting back out. And, well, you'll not be putting the boots back on. I remember we once played a game of touch at Murrayfield, and I think you still thought you were going to score that, but I managed to get back and get you, didn't I?
It was a lovely thing that we did. I think we had a team day out on the main pitch, which was a unique experience, and I was in for a great try, only to be stopped by your good self, which I will never live down. But in my mind, that's quite a wonderful try.
The old habits die hard. Anyway, we think of memories of that, as I say, being on the field with the sponsors, with the partners, just engagement with our own staff here at BT Murrayfield. But not to make this too personal for you, what are your fondest memories? You're 13 years of Scottish rugby, a lot has changed, and we'll come on to that in terms of on field and off field. But are there moments, or good or bad, that really stick in your memory that you'll take forward?
I suppose 13 years has been lots happening, and the sport's evolved a lot during that space as well. So there's different memories at different points of the journey of Scottish rugby. But if there's three, I guess there's three obvious areas for our organisation. One is the grassroots. So a great grassroots memory for me is heading down to the Melrose Sevens and being part and parcel of seeing the Melrose Sevens brought to life. That's a very unique, special event, and it's put on by a special bunch of people in a special town. So always love the Melrose Sevens. That's a sort of grassroots environment. Professional rugby, probably the highlight would be lots of hard work happens in the background by the coaches and the off-field teams, but the players deserve enormous credit, and they should get the credit when they have success. So I really enjoy going to Belfast with the Glasgow Warriors team and watching them beat Munster convincingly and win the Guinness Pro 12, as it was then. And at that point, I was a board director of the Guinness Pro 12, and I was really excited to see Glasgow win that cup. And that was the first time, I think, in the modern era, a professional club in Scotland had won anything. So that was a really important milestone. And then national team-wise, there's been lots of highlights abroad and at home in terms of winning things. But probably the biggest highlight I would have would be this season, you know, getting the games away against a very, very challenging backdrop for our fans and supporters that wanted to watch games and enjoy the games, even though they couldn't be there in person. So you have the joy of watching Scotland win in Twickenham and then Scotland winning in Paris in the same season and winning well. That was fantastic. So it's about winning, but it's also about, I guess, seeing the joy that people get off the back of that, whether it's supporters or players. And there's been loads of moments. There's been a few lows. We try not to talk about World Cups, both 2011, 2015.
There have been three, yeah. Your time would have spanned three, wouldn't it? The New Zealand 11, 2015, and Japan. And I suppose you're right, there's been mixed emotions and mixed performances around World Cup. Do you learn as much from the 19 disappointment as you do from the disappointment of 2015 was a disappointment, but it was in completely different circumstances, really, wasn't it? That last moment at Twickenham.
Yeah, every World Cup is different. I suppose the 2011 World Cup, where you were playing, you know. And, I remember being, you know, very upset, like every Scotland supporter on that last game we played. I think it was your last cap.
It was against England, yeah.
England at Eden Park in
Auckland. I was probably more upset, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you probably were. And again, it's the challenge of knockout rugby, isn't it? That you know, just the smallest things can cause you to get knocked out. But that was a great experience. But I suppose what that doubled down for me internally was that we've got to invest in players. We've got to invest in our structures in terms of the pathway, because you want to make sure that you've got the right tools at your disposal for future World Cups. And had it not been for an unusual decision in 2015, Scotland would have got into the semi-final of that World Cup, and there's no doubt they'd have got into the final, as far as I'm concerned. I think there's been enormous highs off the back of moments of adversity, I think.
And a similar vein to that, you mentioned the Pro 14 against Pro 14 win for Glasgow, and the culmination of the hard work building to you on that point. You had the move to Scotland in there that happened on your watch as well, with the development of the further development of the club and its identity. Taking that as a real positive, but looking ahead, how difficult is it to sustain achievement and sustain success? Because obviously we've not seen, you know, another side win. Everybody moves on, everybody progresses, every team gets better. How hard is it for Scottish rugby to mean not only get success, but then maintain it? Do we need a mindset shift almost to work on that maintaining success rather than almost over-celebrate the win, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so I agree with that. There's so much of what we do is about creating the environment for success to thrive, but then you need to make sure that you've got a winning mindset. And I mean a winning mindset both on the park and off the park as well. So in everything that we do, we need to try to make the most of the resources that we have to be as successful as we possibly can be. And I think one of the things that I think is, you know, if you look at Glasgow as an example, Glasgow Warriors as an example, we've had sold out crowds here for the last sort of 4 years. You can't be complacent and assume that's going to happen again. You know, we've got to work really hard to win back supporters when we can, get them back into the building, give them a reason to come, give them a reason to have a great experience. And then, of course, the product on the pitch needs to be incredible. It needs to be a great winning team. And that's something which everyone's motivated about, both at Glasgow, Edinburgh and Scotland. I think the challenge we have is in a professional environment, there's lots of clubs that are privately owned. And because they're privately owned, their investment decisions are different to a governing body owning two professional clubs. But we've done incredibly well. If you look at the number of players that have developed through our academy, got into the professional clubs, then moved on to the national team, you know, we've got a very successful formula that just needs to keep being nurtured, and I'm sure it will be in the years to come.
And how hard is it? I mean, this is probably almost impossible to answer, but how hard is it to align the everything you get right off field to everything being right on the field at the same time? Because there's obviously obstacles in your way, and there's form of other teams and opposition and other organisations. It's such a big challenge, isn't it, for a governing body to get things off the field that allow you to invest on the field, but then to get that success on the field that takes a long time to build. In terms of, is there luck involved in that to get both elements working the same way, or do you have to build off field first and then follow the on field, or vice versa?
I think you need to do it together. We created this sort of mantra of as one, and that genuinely resonates, like, with players, coaches and administrators. Like, together we're stronger as a result of being aligned about a common purpose. And that common purpose is about success on the field, relentless success on the field, backed up by world-class off-field performance, whether that's in ticketing or marketing or brand building or the commerce side, to give the players the best possible platform to be successful. So as one, that sort of hashtag as one that we sort of claimed and created, which has been embraced by supporters, of course, as well, because they're part of that journey. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the alignment that we've benefited from in Scottish rugby over the last few years. And, you know, there's definitely more to come. And you can see that in the performances with the national team over the Six Nations. But often, you know, we talk about the men's team, and we talk about the success of the men's team. And we sometimes forget a little bit about a whole swathe of our sport, which is the women's team. And the women's team is, I think, got the most growth potential, the most success potential over the next sort of few years. And again, it's a very challenging market, very challenging dynamic, because we don't have the same resources as England or France or New Zealand. But we've got the right ambition to make sure that women's team is going to be successful. So I've no doubt that there's lots to come from the women's team as well. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. We're in the middle of their Six Nations, and it's tough. It's a tough environment, but the more we can invest in behind the women's team, the more successful they'll be.
Yeah, it's quite a difficult, I suppose, message for people who haven't watched a lot of Scotland women. The performance at the weekend, they lost 52-10 to England. But England are on a different level and have been for a long time. I don't think we can quantify Scotland women's success on a result against England. I think what you have to quantify is the performance. And I've seen the performance of the last few years improve and increase. And even on a basic level of, at the weekend, there was a conditioning element and an aspect of the Scottish women that gave us an opportunity to compete and compete hard with England, not for the 80 minutes, but for a lot of it. And that is clear signs of progress and the skill development and certainly the physical condition that's going on. And as I say, England aren't really the benchmark that we want to get to, absolutely, but at the moment they're miles ahead of us, and I've no doubt that over the years we'll close that gap even further.
I think that's also a recognition, Chris, of the evolution of rugby. You know, rugby's only been professional really since 1995.
Yeah.
And you know, it's gone through a lot of growth over a relatively short space of time from a men's professional point of view, and the women's game is catching up now, with other nations having to catch up a bit quicker than others. So we're still a relatively young sport, and we're trying to learn from lots of other sports and pinch ideas, and we've been sort of relentless at stealing ideas from other sports, whether it's over North American sport or Southern Hemisphere sport, to try and make sure that the product around the pitch and the product on the pitch is as good as it possibly can be. And there's more of that to happen, but I think rugby's in brilliant shape, and you can see the level of investment that's going into the sport now, from whether it's private equity or sponsors or broadcasters. You know, the sort of global market really believes in rugby, and it's got a very positive future, I think.
We've done a lot right. We're doing a lot right. There's a lot that will be right in the future. Where have we been ahead of the curve, do you think, over the last, say, 13 years, at the time you've been involved, the last 8 to 10 years? Are there, you know, parts of the business, part of the organisation, part of on-field or off-field, where we've been leading the way? Is it BT Murrayfield hosting Rolling Stones, or events in terms of aligning, you say, the as one, the business, you know, as one in terms of how you can generate income to develop the game at the grassroots or the international level? There will be areas, and I know there's areas where we have been ahead of the curve. What are anyone stick out for you?
I think ahead of the curve, maybe in the sense that we've changed the demographic of our sport. So yeah. If I look at the number of people that come to BT Murrayfield over the last 5 years, there's much more females, there's more families, and there's younger people. Don't get me wrong, we love the older generation, but in terms of the future and the sustainability of our sport, having that broader mix, families, females, and younger people coming through the turnstiles has been a really pleasing thing to see. I think we're the most diverse rugby stadium in the world in terms of that mix now. And we didn't used to be. It was quite a traditional sport with a particular demographic, and that's changed markedly. So the alignment around thinking differently, being innovative in our development of our brand and development of our marketing campaigns has helped us broaden our audience and our appeal, which is then translated into, you know, income through broadcasters, sponsors, and selling at the stadium. So the alignment's been really good. Changing that sort of demographic and sustaining it has been really positive. But there's lots of things that we've tried to do. We've tried to use the asset. Murrayfield is as strong as we might, whether it's concerts, whether it's football games, whether it's European Cup finals. And then we've also backed ourselves and said, you know what, we're going to take rugby on the road. So we've put rugby into Pittodrie. We've put rugby into Inverness Cali Thistle. We put the Guinness Pro 14 final into Celtic Park. We put the Sevens into Ibrox. So we've tried to be tactical in the deployment of rugby around the country to bring more people back into the sport and to get them engaged. And that's worked really, really well. So innovation has been at the cornerstone of all of our thinking. And we've had an incredible team. You know, I've been fortunate to work, I had the pleasure of working with unbelievably talented people at Scottish Rugby, and they've done some incredible things. And so as a team, we've achieved a lot.
I suppose on that as well, the ambition of the league that the Glasgow and Edinburgh play in the moment, the Guinness Pro 14, obviously we'll get a taste of the Rainbow Cup with the South African teams towards the end of the season. You've been heavily involved in the Guinness Pro 14 as well. Where's the future path for that? And there's a lot of excitement around it. Obviously, the South African teams are already mentioned, but there is an excitement around the product we have and how it can be strengthened. Where do you think it will be when you move on and look back? Where's the Guinness Pro 14, 16 Rainbow Cup? Where's it going to be, and what real selling points are they going to have?
Well, I think the Guinness Pro 14, as it currently is just now, has gone through an incredible journey itself. It's really professionalised itself over the last sort of few years, which has been great. So the product's better on the field, the product's better off the field. It's expanded. You know, we expanded a few years ago into Italy. Great. And we expanded again to bring two South African clubs in. And I remember when we brought two South African clubs in, there was a lot of people scratching their head thinking, you know, why would you want to bring two South African clubs in? Why would you want to expand into the Southern Hemisphere? Well, because it's in the same time zone. The television market in South Africa is extremely strong. And it's a pathway perhaps to do a little bit more. And we're looking at that, as you know, with the top four clubs in South Africa potentially joining an expanded Guinness Pro 14. So there's been an innovation in the sort of DNA of that league. We've tried to encourage that through the exec team there, and they've been great at expanding. But more importantly, it's giving a destination for players to want to stay. So whereas previously, and you're a good example of this, Chris, you went down and played down in Gloucester, you headed down south, and I think there's a lot more players now that are thinking, actually, this could be the best league in the world. It's moving in that direction. I don't think we're there yet, but we're moving in that direction. And if you've got the best league in the world, the best players are going to stay, the best coaches are going to be attracted, you're going to have great attendances and great broadcast deals, and it's going to be a real beacon for the global game. And because we've got cross-border competition in the DNA of the Guinness Pro 14, where we play in Ireland, we play in Wales, we play in Italy, we play in South Africa just now, it is a very unique league, a special, special league. And I think it'll go from strength to strength. I know it's in great shape just now, and they've survived the pandemic so far. And that's a tribute actually to the smarts of,
especially with the cross-border nature of it. That makes it more difficult.
Of all the times to be the chairman of the Guinness Pro 14 in the middle of a pandemic, you know, there's easier gigs to do. But the team have been amazing, and the players have been amazing, the coaches have been amazing, and we've managed to conclude the season. And that shows you the resilience of our setup, that you can do that in that cross-border environment. It's not been without its challenges, but they've been brilliant. So I've got no doubt they will go from strength to strength in the years to come. And I'm going to get the joy of coming back and watching the games and as a supporter. And that will be a joy and a real thrill.
I suppose one thing on that, in terms of the game on the field, quite rightly a driving factor from the governing body and from players' organisations, player welfare, and I think we're forward thinking. I think the sport in general is really forward thinking. I think it's really progressive. I think there's some brilliant changes to that. Does that cross border nature of the competition actually help with player welfare as well, in terms of getting an aligned unity in terms of number of games, perhaps, or season structure? Obviously, the international season structure was changed when the pandemic came in. There was a really aligned global calendar on the horizon. But with player welfare driving a lot, could that be a strength as well of the Guinness Pro 14?
I think it can be, and I think one of the benefits of the Guinness Pro 14 is that the main shareholders, along with our private equity partner, CVC, are unions. And embedded in the DNA of the unions is making sure that they grow and nurture the game in a sustainable way, which means that they're very player-focused, so that they're not simply about the number of games, they're about the quality of games, and they're about making sure that we make the most of the tournament. So there is a protection there about looking after the players, because without players and without supporters, there is no game. And that's true in football, true in rugby, it's true in any sport. Without supporters, without players, there is no game. And we can never lose sight of that. Despite the money and the riches that wrap itself around a respective game in rugby, we need to make sure we always have the right format and that we have the right structures to support both those needs, the players and supporters, because whilst expansion is important and it's great and I'm massively supportive of that, it needs to be done not to the detriment of the quality of the competition. And we've been great at doing that so far.
I think you've just answered my next question. The next thing I was going to ask is, what's the most important thing to get right moving forward? But it sounds from that is the most important thing, having the product that is, you know, has the supporters, the players, and really the game at heart.
Definitely. I mean, I think, well, as I mentioned, sort of rugby's in its sort of teenage phase of growing up and maturing because they're relatively young.
We're much better behaved than that, are we not?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We have occasional challenges, as you know, in rugby. But I think the great thing is that we're able to look at other competitions and other sports and see what's worked, what's not worked. You know, I spent a fair bit of time, as you have, looking at other sports and, you know, being comfortable that we can take ideas from other sports that work for us. And I think there's a level of innovation which is embedded into rugby. If you look at the way that we're using the TMO, the sort of television match official, you look at the concussion protocols, I think rugby has led the way in a number of innovations, and that's to enormous credit, but that's happened relatively recently. So there's more innovation, I'm sure, to come over the coming years.
Just to go back at some of your memories, you mentioned Twickenham and Paris this year, the wins in the Guinness Six Nations for the men's side. They were pretty special. Are they foremost in your mind because they're really, really special and just such huge achievements, or is it more because they've been more recent? And is that experience that sets you off almost with a huge, I suppose, celebration in some ways of the achievement of those two fixtures? Is that what you'll take forward because of the most recent memories, or are those truly, under the circumstances, pretty unique results for Scotland?
I think they're fantastic. They're certainly not unique, Chris. We're going to do it again. I've no doubt about that. I think they're special wins away from home in a very challenging set of circumstances. You know, our players are living in a bubble environment, effectively. Mm-hmm. Our staff are delivering games at home in a very challenging environment. We're trying to create a product that is enjoyed by supporters in their millions on BBC or ITV. And to do, back-to-back away wins was very, very special. But it's also a recognition of the enormous hard work that the players put in and the coaches put in. And, you know, they deserve it more than anybody. Of course, delighted for the supporters, but the players who are, you know, living in a challenging environment, as I mentioned, that sort of bubble environment, they deserve huge success. But I think the teamwork that happens in rugby is really important. So the success that the players have enjoyed in the park is as a result of their skill and their ability and the support that they've had from their coaches, but then the support that they've also had from a whole bunch of people behind the scenes and pushed on by wonderful supporters. So it's the cherry on the top when you win, and when you win special games in Paris or in London. But there's a huge amount of hard work that happens from lots of people across the whole organisation, across the whole sport, to make it happen. And I extend that all the way through to volunteers. You know, we've got volunteers the length and breadth of our country, you know, putting out cones, taking minis, looking after the rugby clubs. They're all playing a part They've all played a part in Scotland having success at the international stage. And that alignment that we have as a sport can sometimes be challenging to hold together. But when it is aligned and it's held together and everyone's pushing for the same success on the field, I think we are massively capable of doing very special things, both domestically and internationally.
I suppose, finally, look ahead. What kind of supporter are you going to be when you're here in an unofficial capacity? What are you, edge of the seat guy? Are you get up and shout and scream? Are you, what are you? What are you going to be like? Are we going to have somebody watch you?
I'm looking forward to the thrill of coming to watch a game at Murrayfield, Scotstoun, and enjoying it, because for 30 years there's a lot less enjoyment because you're worried about the event taking place. I'm worried about the players. I'm worried about the coaches and all the business side of activities. So getting the joy to come in now and watch the games, just that'll be a real pleasure. But I'm looking forward to hearing your dulcet tones on the TV and the radio as well. you enjoy a stellar post-rugby career. So
well, Dom, you've been here 13 years. We all wish you the very best in your new role. I say you've already thanked a lot of people who you've worked alongside at Scottish Rugby. I'm sure they'll echo that as well. I'm sure they'll all extend a warm welcome to you the next time you're here at BT Murrayfield to take in a game with your feet up, perhaps a glass of beer or a soft drink, and enjoy the action on the field. Good luck in your role, and thank you once again.
Thank you. Cheers.
Well, a summary of the games that were played last weekend. There was an awful lot of rugby played. To start with the Women's Six Nations, obviously we're touching it with Dominic, the women's result. Not a great result, 52 points to 10 defeat away to England. But as I said, the barometer of success for Scotland at the moment shouldn't really be determined by the result against England. As hard as that is to listen to as proud Scots and supporters, but what you have to look at is performance. Now, the performance was improved, far from ideal, far from the finished article. But in terms of a conditioning aspect and staying with undoubtedly one of the best teams in the world in England, between England and New Zealand, probably for the best team in the world, that ability to make England fight for longer and harder is a big improvement on where Scotland women have been in recent years, I would say. So add to the count as well the fact that the women hadn't played, well, played one game in October. A lot of the home-based players hadn't played any rugby at all, almost for a year, and obviously haven't played together, have had time together, spent time together in training. So that probably explains some of the kind of slow start to the game. Allowed England to get the first try. Scotland were under a lot of pressure early on, defended bravely, and then conceded that first try probably after 10 or 15 minutes, 10, 12 minutes. A poor start to the game, really. One or two errors in the first half, and then the second half kind of stagnated as a game in some ways. I don't think England were particularly happy with the second half. And I don't think we'd be particularly happy with it either, because it lacked intensity. There was stop start. There was a lot of cards, a lot of ill-discipline. But definitely an improvement in terms of physical conditioning and competitiveness, with a lot more quality to come from the women. Their next game's at Scotstoun, not this weekend, but the following weekend in Six Nations. They play Italy, which is a game that Scotland have to win. That's where we should be judging the result as well as the performance. Italy play England this weekend, I think in Italy, and I think Wales play Ireland this weekend. So our weekend off, and we look forward to that at Scotstoun, not this weekend, but the next again weekend. Huge weekend of European rugby as well for the professional teams. Disappointing result to start with Glasgow. It was Friday night away in Montpellier. Another great start actually from Glasgow. I thought they started really well, crisp attack, crisp handling, but the game then fell away, and I know Glasgow are bitterly disappointed with the result. Montpellier scored two tries at crucial times just before and just after half time that swayed the result. Disappointing tries to concede as well. One driving mall, driving line, a massive pack Montpellier have, but I know Glasgow were disappointed with that. And then a couple of poor defensive reads for the second try just after half time. Well finished by Montpellier, but was avoidable in terms of Glasgow. Another disappointing aspect of the Glasgow performance will be the discipline and the number of penalties, and certainly more cards given away. And you know, Glasgow will be aware of that. They'll be working hard to avoid it. And sometimes I think it's easy to say discipline's poor, but I think you almost have to find a reason for why it's poor. And I believe there's lots of different reasons for discipline being poor. Some is, you know, down to the desperation. So the absolute desperation to do the right thing, almost trying too hard. Some of it can be down to a lack of clarity, or some of it can be down to you being understood that you're very reactive, or other times it can just be, you know, really poor decision making or really poor accuracy in your skill technique. So it's very hard. If there's you know, poor discipline within the side, you have to find out the reasons why. And I know that's what Glasgow will be looking. Kind of all teams will be looking at, if you look across the Six Nations and also World Rugby at the moment, there are more red and yellow cards than ever before. So these are all things that coaches across the world will be looking at, indeed the Women's Six Nations as well. So it could be a lot of technical. Well, there have been some changes in law and some heightened, I suppose, examinations of technical skill in the laws that the referees are hot on. So there could be another reason, is the fact that the players aren't adapting quick enough to change, or that necessary change is needed in order to protect player welfare. Sorry. So identifying that penalties going against you and cards, I think there was 16 or 17 yellow cards over the season for Glasgow going against you, is the easy thing to do. And what the difficult thing is changing that behaviour, or finding the reasons for that and then changing it. And I know Glasgow will be doing that. And that's something you can do when you don't have games as well. So this 2-week window in terms of preparing players for the start of the Rainbow Cup, you continue the work that's going into identifying some of the problems that are causing all teams to be under pressure through too many penalties and too many cards given away. So, you know, although the players are off, although there are no weekend games this weekend, there's still a massive amount of work to do in both camps. Edinburgh played on Sunday and were heavily beaten in Paris by Racing 92, 56 points to 3. Now, similar, exposure to Glasgow in terms of the start. Started really well, creating an opportunity they should have taken, and then scored a try that was quite rightly chalked off for a knock-on, and the line Johnson cut a really nice line from a set-piece play, but the ball had just been knocked on in the line out. So the start of the game could have been different, or the pattern of the game could have been different from the start if Edinburgh had been a little bit more accurate. But for me, it was just a result of just being physically ground down. In the first half, I thought Edinburgh just, unfortunately, just emptied themselves. They emptied the tank in terms of having to defend for such long phases of play against such a massive physical side. Again, everybody says it's easy to say, but Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson outstanding in the back row and alongside others. But just, I think Edinburgh run out of steam against a much bigger, more powerful pack. And the disappointing thing for me, I think after, with 12 minutes to go, 68 minutes, I think Rassam had only scored 4 tries in that period of 12 minutes, which was a sign of Edinburgh just having emptied the tank and then also just trying to force the game. At that point, you have to try something. You're a knockout rugby. You have to try and open the game up, be a bit more risky in some ways. But it counted against Edinburgh in the end. So, bitterly disappointing result to go down as heavily to bow out of the European Champions Cup. But mainly down to physicality. I think tactically, Edinburgh found themselves in a catch-22 because they didn't have a lot of possession. But when they did have possession, I felt as if Racing's defence forced them back inside, back into that big front five with that kind of umbrella-shaped defence from Racing. And the catch-22 here for me is when I was watching, I said, Edinburgh actually have to kick more or kick attack more, but they haven't had a lot of possession. So in order to break up that Racing defence, I thought they could have put some attacking kicks in, try to change the shape of the game a little bit. But the risk in that is if you haven't had possession and the attacking kick isn't accurate, or the chase isn't accurate, or it's slightly at the wrong time, you then end up conceding that possession that you desperately want in order to control the game. So difficult, but it's one that Edinburgh will be frustrated, players and management will be frustrated by. So both professional teams out of Europe, there's no games this weekend as it's the quarterfinals of Europe, and then there's no fixtures for the Edinburgh and Glasgow next weekend. So there's a 2-week window where the guys can rest and recover for a few days at least, I think, and then there'll be a big focus on the Rainbow Cup, which kicks off the weekend after that with, I think, Benetton visit Glasgow and Edinburgh over at Zebre for week one. So that has to be the focus for Edinburgh and Glasgow as we look ahead to the, I suppose, the culmination of the end point of the season. But disappointing to exit Europe with the scorelines, but the hopefully learning will be there, and the players can use it as a starting point really to really fire on for this, the last period of the season. Well, that's about it for this week. I say a solo effort. No one to bounce my ideas, no one to bounce my analysis of the games off. So I could be talking utter nonsense potentially as usual, or we might hit something there. But this is where I suppose you appreciate when your friends and co-hosts are here to either shoot you down or build you up. But as I say, on own this week, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Dominic earlier on. And I look forward to chatting to you all next week, hopefully with some mates around.